The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Sky Broadband. Create, do, explore. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
My guest this morning credits painting with saving him from a life of crime. He now uses art to express himself. He says it's changed his life. He's got quite the story. His name is Eddie Cahill. And Eddie, you're very welcome to the show today.
Hey, thank you.
I'm going to begin at the beginning with you. You had a very, very busy household as a child. Tell us about it and where it was and what it was like.
Well, we started off in Crumlin. Altogether, there was 13 children. And from that, we ended up in Rathmines, and from there to Drimna.
Yeah.
You know, where I am now at the moment. You know?
13 children in, 13. In a house in Crumlin. How many bedrooms?
Two.
Right.
Which was normal at the time.
Yeah, that not was, uncommon.
That was it.
And,
that
was and
it.
What was that like when you were a little lad?
It was good. I wouldn't have a bad memory about it. Not one single bad memory. You know, to me it was good.
And your dad had an interesting job, didn't he?
Yes, he was a lighthouse keeper.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, he would... I think he was 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So for a half a month you wouldn't see him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then he'd be back. So that was good as well. You know, we used to go down there to the lighthouse and what had you. So it was kind of a bit of an adventure as well involved in that. So
that's pool bag.
Aye.
And all that time away from home, was he somebody you loved? And,
aye, of course.
And your mother?
Yeah, the same. The two little pets, kind of.
Really?
You know.
And were
soft,
you,
very soft.
Were they?
Kind of, very soft people. Yeah.
And were you a good boy as a child, or were you...
I think so. The only problem I would have had was at the end of the school period, when I got up to about 13 years of age, I was in the grammar school in Armagh Road in Crumlin, and I had finished everything. I had nowhere else to go at 13, but you couldn't leave until you were 14, so they wanted me kind of to repeat.
Yeah.
Instead of sending me over to the technical school, which she said wasn't for me, they wanted me to repeat the year, but I refused and I left.
Right.
I didn't go back to the school, so they sent their inspectors after me. So that's how I ended up getting locked up in Letterfrack.
So why were you picked up by the inspectors?
I'm not going to school.
And what were you doing instead of going to school?
We would work. We worked mainly, most of the kids in the area would have worked part-time kind of in the Dublin Dairies, which was a milk company.
Yeah.
You know, delivering milk.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that would have been about it. You know?
So what is it like then when you're 13 and an inspector taps you on the shoulder and says you're rumbled?
Bad.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Isn't it?
Well, I don't know. But tell me
you
what...
Take it, like, we were in Crumlin and you never left it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The furthest you went to was the school. And next minute you're 180 miles away in the middle of Connemara.
But did they pluck you off the street?
They did.
So you're grabbed by the collar.
Yeah, taking the court.
Putting into court.
Yes.
And you're 13 years old.
Yes.
And what did the judge say?
You're off to Letterfrack.
And you're on a bus to Connemara.
Into a cell. Into a police car and down to Connemara.
How many of you on the bus to Connemara?
Just one, just myself.
Just yourself?
Yes. No, I went on in the police car.
Did they bring you all the way down on
your
own?
They did, yeah.
Do you remember the first time you saw Letterfrack?
In the dark, yeah. Oh.
Do you remember going through the doors?
Kind of, yeah. It was a dormitory system, so you would see that how bright would the dormitories be at night? Dark. So everything was dark, yeah. So you were brought to Galway Police Station, and then from 80 miles away, the brothers came in then in their own car, kind of.
Oh, they collected you from Galway?
Collected you from Galway Police Station.
So you were on your own in Galway Police Station?
Yes.
And how many brothers came to collect you?
Two.
And you were in the car with the two brothers?
Yeah.
Do you remember that journey out?
Aye, silence and darkness, kind of, you know. Because back then there was no kind of street lights or main roads, so it was just a little... A boring kind of film.
How long were you in Letterfrack for?
I think about 14 months altogether.
And how would you describe it?
It wasn't good. No. It was a nasty place.
Yeah. In what way?
It was nasty in every way, kind of, you know. They were, even though it never happened to me, kind of, because I was a bit older and lucky.
You saw things?
Everybody did, you know. Everybody did. You know? You didn't actually see, but you knew, you know. what was going on, kind of, yeah. Everybody knew what was happening, yeah.
Were you at the receiving end of any kind of class of physical cruelty
kind of,
there?
Beatings, kind of, yeah. But then they kind of, they gave up on that. And they tried then, what they used to do then, they would get other prisoners who were the little lackeys, kind of, to pick fights with you and all that. Trying to break you, kind of break you down, kind of. But it didn't work, you know. I was never broken down, kind of, yeah.
Were you the only boy of the Cahills to be in Letterfrack, or did others join you?
I was in Letterfrack, and Martin, he was my elder brother, he was in Dangan.
Dangan.
Yeah, he went off to Dangan. I went to Letterfrack, he went to Dangan.
And Martin Cahill, of course, he began go on to become known as the General. Do you think he was damaged by his time in Dangan?
I think so. I think he said he said he was. Whether it's true or not, I don't know.
You sound like you doubt he was.
He said the mad monks in the bog drove him crazy. That was that's what he said.
What did they do to you? Did they drive you crazy? Did they put you on edge? Did they change you as a person?
They were a disappointment more than anything else. You know, you have people there and you kind of look up to them. And it happened a lot of times on my travels through life that I was more disappointed with people.
And you felt the brothers were a disappointment. You thought they'd be somebody that you might admire.
They had this position, which was a false position, kind of in life. You know, so they were a huge kind of you kind of gave up believing in things, kind of. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You got out of there. You must have been about 15 then at that stage.
Getting on to 15. Yeah.
What did you do then when you had your freedom?
When you left there, the whole thing about this place was that if they didn't like you and you didn't fit, they marked you, and this is how they marked you, by locking you up. So when you got out of Letterfrack, if you ever went looking for jobs or anything, this was a history that came back to haunt you. You know, when they say, oh, he was in...
Yeah.
He was in the home, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
He's trouble, you know? So that came to haunt you. So after that, it was sheep and lambs, all that kind of stuff, you know?
What do you mean?
You were destroyed either way. You know, so it made no difference how badly you were destroyed. So there was nothing to hold you back. You know, no restraint there because your life was kind of ruined.
So you might as well just do what you want to do and fall into the bad.
That was it. You know, yeah, that was the life that was there for you. But you were too silly, kind of, and too young at the time to realise it. And before you did realise it, it was too late. You know.
Yeah. You got into the life of crime, really, isn't that it?
That's
ultimately?
It. That's it.
What? When you look back on that, you robbing people, robbing banks, and so on. Do you regret it, or do you feel that it was the system's fault, or do you? You know, how do you reflect on it all?
I think, with a regret, you'd have to regret it, you know, and that you were you'd go through life doing all these things, and you're thinking you're kind of a John Wayne character, kind of, you know, Jesse James, whatever, you know. But at the same time, you were a broken person, you know, because the minute you committed a crime, they won, you know.
Yeah.
They won. So we were broken without even realising we were broken. It took me kind of, as John Lonigan used to say, it takes us an extra 21 years to mature, which usually we would mature at 42 instead of 21.
Yeah, I understand.
So we learned kind of, it was a slow learning. We thought we were kind of strong, but we were kind of really broken, you know. Now, the stronger thing to do would have been never to go down the road that they had designed for us, kind of, you know.
Did you work with, and I say use the term loosely, did you work with your brother, the General Martin Cahill?
I did,
some of the crimes. Yes. Did you get a kind of a kick out of the crimes? Was it exciting? Was it an adventure for you guys?
Well, the alternative...
Was what?
Go on the dole and sit at home and be called a scrounger for the rest of your life. Because that's all you hear now, the people always a dole scrounger, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not bad enough that they have you unemployed and have you on the dole. They want to abuse you as well on top of all that. So I don't think we were the kind of people who would accept that from anybody, you know.
When Martin was killed, were you surprised he was only 45?
Was I surprised? No, I wasn't. I wasn't surprised, you know, because there was people wanted him to stop and he wasn't going to stop. So the only way to stop him was to kill him, you know.
Do you miss him?
I do, of course. Of course, yeah. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would always miss your brother. And what do you miss about him?
Everything. Yeah.
How would you describe him?
Determined. Yeah. Determined. Yeah.
Well, it was a bullet that stopped him. What stopped you?
Knowledge, I think, you know.
Of knowledge.
I kind of
what?
Always knew, no matter what I was doing, I always knew kind of that I was that I was wrong.
Did you really? At the back of you had an angel at the back of the head fighting.
I always knew, kind of. You know, yeah. This really wasn't for us, and we weren't kind of designed for it, you know.
So when did you say that's enough now?
I'd say I was about probably 30, up around that age, kind of. And it takes a long time to withdraw from it.
Does it?
Because you can't just stop it, because you're... I don't know, there's so many pressures come in from different angles, kind of, you know. So I knew I'm giving this up. I just needed another door, you know,
and
a way out.
What was that door?
The art, believe it or not.
So tell me about it, though. When did the art suddenly appear for you, and when did that door open for you?
That was, what age was I then? I think I was around 40, you know.
And where were you?
But slowly I'd been... withdrawing from the world, from that life, you know, because I knew, I just knew, you know, it doesn't take a brain scientist to know that it wasn't a great road, you know,
sure,
you know, and I had children, you know, I wasn't good. So I was really searching for a way.
Yeah, a route.
Out, a route out, you know, where I could just step away, you know, and not surrender. You know, even in the prison life, I never, ever, ever, I was like Ian Paisley, no surrender, kind of, you know. I was going, if I was leaving, I was leaving on my own terms, kind of. A bit arrogant, maybe, but...
Who were you refusing to surrender to?
The state, mainly, you know.
Because...
It was a matter of them and us, always was.
To go back to the letter fract, do you think?
Yes.
Okay.
To the whole thing.
Yeah, treatment of
a
child.
This was a life designed for us.
Okay.
You know, they needed prisoners. You know, they'll always need prisoners. They'll always need unemployed people, you know. And it's not on a merit thing, you know. We have never judged on our merits. You're judged from where you're from. You know, and do you fit? You know,
where did the
we didn't fit in anywhere.
I understand that. And where did the light bulb of the art? Who showed you a painting or a paintbrush or oil or whatever it might have been? Yeah. What happened?
I was in Portlaoise. I got moved down to Portlaoise. There was people down there, and they were at an art class. You know. And I'm looking at him, you know. Art.
You were laughing at him, were you?
It's kind of the fox and the hen house kind of type of a situation.
Yeah, we should mention the Rustboro and the bait collection and everything like that. Yeah, I see where you're going with that. Okay. Okay, that's a wicked sense of humour. All right. Go on anyway. There you are looking at that.
And normally when in the prison, I never got involved with the system. You know, I just went my own way there. Come hell or high water, no matter what happened. Solitary confinement, I didn't care. I did prison on my own terms, kind of, you know. Again, maybe slightly arrogant, but that was the situation. You know, that was the life, you know. That was normal for me. I did everything my own way. And I never got involved with prison education or anything like that. You know, that's kind of...
That was a concession, maybe.
That was a concession.
But the art struck you as something you wanted to do. And you got stuck in and started doing paintings.
That was it.
What
was
the art doing for you psychologically or emotionally?
It was mainly when the art class, when I went there, they were on the summer break, kind of, you know. So there was no classes on. So then the art teacher appears, and it was Brian McGuire. You know, so when I saw him, he was my first point of interest. And I looked at him. He looked like one of us, kind of. You know, that was the first reaction. Jeez, I couldn't tell him from the prisoners, because he walked down the landing, heading down to the art class. So that was enough for me, kind of. So I went down and followed them down, and I used to watch them. Yeah, I didn't take part in that. Yeah. I used to watch them. Jesus, and it was, he was a magician, kind of, with a paintbrush. You know? So I used to sneak materials out of the art class. You weren't supposed to have any paint in the cells or anything like that, in case you were disguising holes in the walls or whatever, you know, painting over them. I used to sneak up with the paint and the paper, and I'd paint by my own in the cell.
Yeah.
And then I absolutely just got locked onto it, you know. And that was it. I used to do 12 hours, kind of. I'd start at kind of 8 o'clock in the evening and stop at 8 o'clock the next morning. You know, I'd paint all through the night.
What was it doing for you?
I disappeared. Five years in the prison, I disappeared. You know, people hardly ever saw me, you know. Because I'd be working all night, painting all night, and in the daytime I'd be asleep.
Right.
So they hardly ever saw me. They would come with the paint, they would come and they would come into the cell and they'd take the paint off you, you know, because you're not supposed to have it. But then I ended up with charcoal.
Anything you could get your hands on, really?
Yes. So the charcoal kind of they'd leave you with.
What's your favourite thing? I saw some of your paintings. They're very beautiful, if I may say so. Titles like Buried Treasure, Living in the Dark, Consequences, Sacrificed, Rising Up. I mean, these are titles that when people hear you talking today have a different class of resonance. And you can buy one of yours for about 700 euro up to 8.5 grand. So you've evolved as a talent. In fact, your latest art exhibition, Beneath the Surface, which ran at the Origin Gallery in Fitzwilliam Square, was opened by Justice Robert Houghton.
There you go. All my friends now are High Court judges.
But they are. They're buying your work.
Yes, the world has changed.
How do you reflect on that? That it's the barristers and the judges who are drawn to your work. What is that?
Well, we kind of know. We've known each other.
Well, you have. Yeah, but under very different circumstances. But you've evolved into from one very different life to another. How does that feel?
Good. Better than it was, kind of. I'm more content, you know. I'm more content now. You know?
And you're still painting?
Still painting. I never stop.
Where do you like to paint?
I paint at home, on the floor, you know. Yeah. Right in the sitting room when nobody is around, you know. They're either in work or they're in bed, you know.
What do you think Martin Cahill would have made of the judge opening the exhibition of the barristers buying?
He would have liked it, I think.
And what do you say to the people down through the years who might feel hurt by what you or he did down through the years? What do you say to them after all this time?
Yeah. Kind of the way I kind of look at that, if somebody did me a harm and apologised, I wouldn't be too happy.
You wouldn't be?
Please don't apologise to me. If you've done it, do it. And go away. Don't come apologising to me.
You wouldn't say sorry to anyone who felt upset or hurt by your criminal
background. I probably would, but I wouldn't make a habit of going around and saying it to them. I think it's an insult. You know? I think it's an insult. You know? Somebody come along and apologise. Hello.
They might say, well, look, fair enough, you know, I was hurt.
Well, if they wanted an apology, and Kate, we'd look at, but how would you even find them? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know?
They'd have to come to find you.
Yeah, because who are they? You know, I don't know who they are, you know?
So apologies. No, yeah. You're having an Edith Piaf moment here. No regrets?
No regrets. I would have regrets, of course, you know, but... Would I apologise? I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay. Your artwork, meanwhile, was recently displayed there in the Origin Gallery. Yeah. Where do people go if they want to buy?
As you say, the Origin Gallery is run by Noelle Campbell-Sharp.
Yes, you know? She's here today.
I've been with her now a good long time, and she's kind of like myself. She's a grafter. She's a worker.
One last question: what do the legal eagles say about your paintings? Why do they like them? Why do they buy them?
Well, the stuff I do is the people that they deal with every day, you know?
Yeah. Do you think that's a connection that they make?
It's there. I deal with people on the streets, and at the moment, the exhibition that's in there that you've seen is down to all this feuding and all this kind of killings. And what really bothers me about it is where they kill somebody and they don't give the body back. All that type of stuff. Yeah. It's horrible stuff, you know? So they're really familiar. So I'm painting their world as well as my own, kind of, you know.
And you continue to paint at home on the floor?
I do. I have a good flexible back.
You need it for a 70-year-old. Not bad going. Eddie Cahill, thank you for coming in to see us this morning.
Thank you.
Good to see you, and thanks for your time. The text number is always 51551.